Chapter 32, The Prophet of the Wilderness. Elijah, the grandest and most impressive of the prophets in his life and actions, came to Israel when he was most needed. The whole nation was living in sin and idolatry, and Samaria lay under the seductive spell of Jezebel. Elijah seems to have been something of a mystery. Nothing is known of his birth, family, or early history. He was called a sojourner of Gilead, and he lived among the hills beyond the Jordan. He was anything but a man of courtly ways. He wore his hair long, he dressed in black camel's hair with a leather girdle, and lived in the simplest way. He approached the corrupt court of Jezebel only when he had a message for the king. His errand accomplished, he quickly turned his back on the city and dropped out of sight in lonely places. To his soul, full of high ideas of worship, the wild frenzy and degrading practices of Baal and Ashtoreth worship were unbearable. Our first view of him was not, evidently, his first appearance in Samaria. He stood before King Ahab and fearlessly delivered his message, "As Jehovah, the God of Israel, lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but at the utterance of my word." He did not remain to see the effect of his words. Perhaps Ahab laughed good-naturedly, but as soon as Jezebel had recovered from her first surprise, it would not have been well for Elijah to have been within her reach. The time had come when she was taking steps towards putting an end to Jehovah worship, and God had warned Elijah to withdraw. Jezebel stirred up the king's anger against the prophet. A close search for him was made, and her fury knew no bounds. As they could not locate Elijah to punish him, she had other prophets of God seized and put to death. One of the king's officers saved many of these by hiding them in mountain caves. He kept about 50 in each cave, and we can imagine with what difficulty he smuggled food to so many. The third year came, but no relief was in sight. The land was full of suffering, and the king longed for the prophet. They had searched for him far and near, but all in vain, and perhaps they concluded that he must have died of famine in the wilderness, or been torn to pieces by some hungry beast. For a time, Elijah lived in a lonely spot near the brook Cherith. There he was fed by the ravens in some wonderful way. When the drought continued, and this brook became dry, he had to make a change. He was commanded by God to go to the other side of Judah, to a place called Sarepta, in the kingdom of Ethbaal, the father of Queen Jezebel. It certainly looks like the irony of fate that the person whom Jezebel spared no efforts to find, that she might lay violent hands on him, should be living safe and sound in her father's dominions. The 3 years famine was drawing to a close, and the desolateness of the land was complete. Now, if ever, the king and people would be ready to listen to the word of God, and Elijah was directed to show himself to the king. The want had become so great that even the king and the governor of his household were out to see if, by chance, they could find near fountains and brooks enough grass to save the horses and mules. To make the search thorough and as wide as possible, the two had separated and taken different courses. Elijah was on his way to Samaria to see the king, when he came face to face with his governor, Obadiah. The royal servant recognized the great prophet at once and fell on his face in awe. "Art thou my lord Elijah?" he exclaimed. The prophet assured him that he was, and asked him to go and tell King Ahab. The devout servant was terror-stricken. He knew how every corner of the kingdom had been searched for the prophet. Now, if he should report to the king that the person he most wanted had been found, and when the king came in great haste to secure him, he should not find any trace of him, Ahab would make Obadiah suffer for the disappointment. Elijah gave his promise that he would not vanish, and the king was informed. Ahab could hardly believe his ears. Was he then to find the man who had brought such suffering to the nation? At sight of the prophet, he forgot everything but his indignation and anger. "Art thou the troubler of Israel?" was his bold greeting. Elijah fearlessly threw back the blame where it belonged. "I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house," was his reply. Ahab had nothing to say. In Elijah's presence, he always seemed to feel the majesty and authority of the prophet. The king had his good qualities. "Send and gather to me all Israel to Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal 450, and the prophets of Ashtoreth 400, that eat at Jezebel's table," commanded Elijah. Ahab was so impressed that he obeyed him at once. The famine had humbled the king. The scene which followed is the most noteworthy of Elijah's ministry. On Mount Carmel, the high promontory which seemed to be dipping his feet in the western sea, stood the congregation of Israel, as many as could be hastily brought together, and the 850 priests of idolatry, and the king himself. Elijah rebuked the king and people for their weak and wavering religious zeal. "How long go ye limping between the two sides?" he exclaimed. "If Jehovah be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." The subdued people said not a word, and we can imagine that the large company of heathen priests looked on in silent contempt to see what this mad prophet would do next. Elijah raised his hand, and looking at the king, proposed the severest test of the divinity of gods in the history of religion. I only, am left a prophet of Jehovah, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Then he suggested that those priests take one bullock and prepare it to sacrifice on one altar, and he do the same with another bullock on another altar. The wood was to be laid on the altar, but no fire kindled under it. Instead, they were to pray to their gods, and he to Jehovah, and the God that answered by fire, let him be God. The people answered, "It is well spoken." The king gave the command, and the Baal priests could not withdraw. The priests opened the ceremony. They laid their sacrifice on the altar without fire, and called on the name of Baal from early morning until the noon hour. As no voice answered them, they leaped about the altar in frenzy. Elijah stood aside and watched their frantic efforts. "Cry aloud," he said in a mocking tone, "for he is a god. Either he is moving, or he has gone aside, or he is on a journey, or peradventure he is sleeping and must be awakened." In greater desperation, they kept up their appeals, cutting themselves with knives and lances, as was their custom in worship, till the blood gushed out upon them. But the evening came without results. Perhaps it was the next morning when Elijah's part came. In the face of the failure of the priests, he began his work with confidence. In the presence of all the people, he built up the altar of God of 12 stones. Around this altar he made a good-sized trench. He put the wood in order and laid the sacrifice on the wood. Then he ordered water to be poured on the offering and wood till the water ran around the altar and filled the trench. This was done that no Baal priest could accuse him of having fire secreted in the altar. When all was ready, Elijah prayed to his God, "Hear me, O Jehovah, hear me, that this people may know that thou art God." The answer came as swift as lightning from the sky. The fire of Jehovah fell and consumed the burnt offering, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. The people were amazed and awed. They fell on their faces and cried, "Jehovah, he is God! Jehovah, he is God!" The priests of Baal were dumb, and the king looked on quietly while Elijah had the ministers of the lowest kind of idolatry put to death. Human life was held very cheap in those days, before Christ came to show the world that all men are brothers. Elijah turned to Ahab and said, "Get thee up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of abundance of rain." While the king was joyously eating and drinking, Elijah went higher up on the mount and bowed himself on the earth with his face between his knees. His servant had been sent to look toward the sea for the coming rain. He returned, saying that he saw nothing to give promise of rain. The prophet sent him again and again, and the seventh time he was able to report that a cloud was rising out of the sea as big as a man's hand. "Make ready thy chariot and get thee down, that the rain stop thee not," was the word Elijah sent to Ahab, who by this time was higher up on the mount. In a little while the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. The king hastened on his way, but when he reached the gate of Jezreel, he found that Elijah had outstripped him, and he was there waiting. If Jezebel had been away, she had returned by the time Ahab reached the summer home. As usual, she was soon in possession of the whole story of how her priests had been humiliated and put to death, and of how Elijah's God had been proclaimed the only God. Jezebel was more than angry. The much-needed rain was as nothing in her eyes compared with the death of her priests. She sent a dark threat to the prophet, "So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." Elijah knew by this that Ahab had gone back under her influence, and he became disheartened. He arose and went for his life into the wilderness. The next picture we have of him is where he was sitting alone under a solitary wilderness bush. The 3 years of drought, his prayers and strenuous work on Mount Carmel, all seemed in vain. Israel would go back to Baal worship under the strong influence of Jezebel. Elijah preferred to live away from the city. He shrank from public life and ran away from it as often as he dared. But when God's Spirit told him that his duty was to serve his fellow men, he returned obediently to the court, which he disliked to see. After he had anointed Elisha to succeed him, Elijah was sent to rebuke Ahab in the vineyard of Naboth after Jezebel's fearful crime. This was his last meeting with the king, as far as we know, and it made a deep impression on Ahab. Israel sank lower and lower in idolatry. The outlook was dark, but the turning point was not far away. Elijah's work for Israel was not in vain. We have one more view of Elijah. Ahab died in battle, and his son Ahaziah succeeded him. He was weak and superstitious, and we do not doubt that Jezebel had more complete sway than ever. Ahaziah met with an accident. He had not been king very long when, by some chance, he fell through a lattice in his upper chamber and was severely injured. We are not surprised that the son of Jezebel did not consult the hated prophet Elijah in his distress. No doubt Jezebel was at his bedside and sent the messengers to inquire of the god of Ekron what would be his fate. The prophet Elijah purposely met these men on their way and made known to them that it was not necessary for them to go farther. "The king shall not come down from his bed, but he shall surely die," was the message he sent to the king. This was a depressing report they had to give the king. When they added a description of the person they had met as a hairy man with a girdle of leather around his loins, the king at once knew him. "It is Elijah the Tishbite," he exclaimed with scorn. The king was very angry. Why had this old prophet, whom he had been taught by his mother to hate, interfered with his messengers? At once he sent a captain with 50 men to bring him into his presence. Elijah was sitting on the top of a high hill when the threatening company arrived. At a word from the prophet, all these men were destroyed. Again, the king sent up a captain with his 50 men. These too were destroyed. A third company was sent out by the desperate king, but this time the captain came up humbly and fell on his knees before Elijah and prayed that their lives might be spared. The prophet had mercy on them and went down to see the king. When he stood in the presence of Ahaziah, he told him the plain truth. In this weak son of Ahab and the wicked Jezebel, he saw the evils which had come to Israel. "Thou shalt surely die," he said to the sick king. Elijah's public work was done. The future of the Hebrew race was better for his severe work. After this, he only waited for his translation.